Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
This is Lee Turner with After Hour Cinema. I'm so pleased to be here with the Jacked Up Review Show podcast. I appreciate these guys having me on. Today, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite actors, the very prolific Clancy Brown, who has an amazing 296 credits on IMDb. Today, I'm going to kind of ignore all his prolific voice work and really kind of focus on what I'm going to consider kind of his three most iconic roles. Now, this is my opinion only. Again, I first remember Clancy Brown seeing him as a very young teenage tough guy in 1983's Bad Boys opposite Sean Penn. A scant 3 years later, he was appearing as the Kurgan in one of his most iconic roles in the movie Highlander, a true cult classic starring opposite Christopher Lambert as the 2,000-plus-year-old Kurgan, the most powerful of the immortals. It became somewhat of a signature role for Clancy Brown. The next iconic role for him, in my opinion, has to be The Shawshank Redemption, where he plays an evil prison guard lieutenant who just torments Tim Robbins' character. Again, it's one of those great films. It's one of the new classics, probably one of the greatest films of the 90s, and Clancy Brown just does an amazing job kind of embodying just pure evil and how you can just really impact someone's life. Again, just a great role and just showing his just diversity. His next role, just to kind of an opposite, is his role as a prison lieutenant in the movie The Hurricane. There, instead of playing an evil guard, he plays a very kind guard who helps, true story, Reuben Hurricane Carter overcome just years of being falsely imprisoned for a crime that he didn't commit. Again, just the dichotomy between the two roles just shows that his range as an actor. But again, I think those are his three most iconic roles. Again, he's had so many credits, just really hard to pin down three roles. But again, Clancy Brown is just one of a great treasure of actors. Again, 296 IMDb credits, so he obviously knows what he's doing. And again, I appreciate this appearance on the Jacked Up Review Show podcast. We look forward to featuring the Jacked Up Review podcast on this upcoming season of After Hour Cinema. So be sure to download the Jacked Up Review podcast and check out After Hour Cinema. Thank you. And again, this is Lee Turner.
So, Tom hasn't been with us in a while, so I will let you introduce us to how you got introduced to none other than Clancy.
Well, I have to be honest, I was a latecomer, but I was happy to see him as a villain Highlander, which is still one of my favorite 80s movies.
Bam! I love that.
The cut has improved your voice. But I just was just enthralled by what he brought into the role, and just various things about him, his manners and his voice, everything came together. I could actually believe he was malevolent and that he could actually legitimately do some of the things he did on the film.
Ironic, since he hated that part.
Right, it's like, yeah. It made his career and both typecast him for a while and just generic villain roles, and so he pretty much had what a lot of these other guys did, David Patrick Kelly, Michael Massey, and even Michael Madsen. So it's like, yeah, he was like, you didn't know what you were going to see him in, and when he showed up, but each time he shows up, it doesn't matter. He's like, oh, I'm in for some kind of fun ride. He's in it. Daniel, when did you start caring that about his voice and acting style?
Well, the role that I think had the most impact on my younger self was The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, jeez. Yes.
Big shoes to fill, obviously, but, you know, just I've come to appreciate that the man did get typecasted just because he has this immense physical presence. But particularly as a vocal talent, he is has such an incredible range. I was blown away to realize he was Lex Luthor in the Superman cartoon in my boyhood.
Yes.
And IMO, the best Lex Luthor there's been yet.
Absolutely. And it was one of those, it makes you wonder who else, you know, because he wasn't like Mark Hamill where, you know, his physical presence was threatened and then he decided he was just going to stick with voiceovers. He was doing it just on the side like a lot of these character actors, and people liked his voice so much they just kept inviting him back. And
I love blowing people away with the fact that he's Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob.
Yeah, it's both. Some people, that's all they know him from because they just don't watch anything besides cartoons, and other people's like, yeah, I never knew.
I didn't know that until a few years ago.
You know, really? Stupid boast. One of my favorite little YouTube triumphs was a remark on that video from the church from the original Highlander. You know, it's better to burn out than fade away. And I just said, and then he became Mr. Krabs and SpongeBob. And so many people replied, just like, I thought you were joking.
Jesus. He's been fortunate enough to avoid a lot of, you know, just direct-to-video stuff and just kind of focus more on just more obscure indie dramas and just I couldn't find anything on whether or not he had a theater background, but I did see that, you know, just so many other cartoons I thought forgot even existed and that more obscure TV movies, and I was like, oh no, that's right, he was that one sheriff or he was that one doctor. John, when did you start just becoming a fan?
Well, I mentioned Highlander, that's how I got introduced to him, like most people, you would say, besides Mr. Krabs. And it's strange. Whenever I always see him, even if he played a villain, he was typecast, usually. I always thought he brought something, at least something interesting to the role, something creative compared to other people who would just play very generic.
Right.
That's why I've always appreciated him.
Or they were limited, and he was just good at just kind of the intimidating smile.
Oh, yeah. Gave him nightmares even as a kid.
Indeed. Okay, so just circle around, you know, just for various ones. I always forget he's in Bad Boys, but not to be confused with the Michael Bay movie, that the prison movie with Sean Penn and Isai Morales, where he plays cellmate Viking. And
things to come.
Yeah, I have tried multiple times to watch Buckaroo Banzai, but I'm sure someone here is a bigger fan of this.
Bingo.
I never get into that. I tried. But
he played Rawhide. And I kid you not, my film professors would even include this on their best movies of all times list. And I was just like, you're fucking joking, but okay.
Really?
Yeah. Tom or Daniel, if you guys have seen this, please try and explain. What is this movie even about?
Nothing at all.
Well, at least you're honest.
It's about something.
I would keep trying to come back as I'm like, yeah, Jeff Goldblum, Lithgow, and Lloyd.
Basically, it's a story of a young man, a young girl, a rocket car, and an intergalactic invasion from another dimension. All done with crustacean looking spaceships.
Man. I mean, they definitely were. It was kind of like someone wanted to make Back to the Future or The Last Starfighter, but didn't know how. And yet had all these very giving actors. I don't hate it, but I don't understand it. So that just kind of piques my curiosity, and I just always tune out each time I watch it. So, oh,
same here.
Some people in the chat wanted us to talk about The Bride. I'm sure I saw it all somewhere along the way, but I just only remember Sting's weird haircut and, You know, Jeff Bezos.
I remember the title much.
Character. Yeah.
I will kill him.
I will kill him. It's kind of, it is kind of interesting though, because he kind of was always game for any kind of B movie or indie premise, and yet he kind of had such a gothic backdrop that made him stand out and not be kind of a Julian Sands kind of guy where that's all he was doing. So, other than Highlander, which I guess we can all just say he just ruled as the Kurgan, he just had the intimidation factor up to 1,000. When you guys saw Extreme Prejudice or Michael Jackson's Moonwalker, just what were your first impressions on that?
Well, Moonwalker just, was I on drugs?
that's everyone was.
Bizarre movie.
It is. So I think that at that point, when he was in that and Blue Steel, that got him out of playing the psycho role, because I've tried watching Shoot to Kill a few different times and I'm just like, Tom Berenger and Sidney Poitier, what a duo. And there's just really nothing to Clancy Brown's psycho character. He's kind of annoying. But when I see him in Blue Steel, it's like, oh, so he can play a boyfriend. Okay, cool.
Which I appreciated, because it wasn't a typical role that they try to cast him in every time.
Right. And then you moved on to Ambition, which was a movie I've always seen recommended and I could never find, but it was just another psycho thriller that was kind of a more creative cat and mouse movie where, like, an author is realizing that, you know, life is imitating art, and it was co-written and co-starred Blue Diamond Phillips, so that was kind of cool. Past Midnight was a movie best known for starring Natasha Richardson and Rutger Hauer, and co-written by a then-unknown little video store junkie called Tarantino.
Wonder what ever became of him.
Yeah. And what's stupid is Wikipedia claims this aired on USA Network. It actually premiered on HBO, according to Rutger Hauer's autobiography. So, yeah, whatever. I recall it being a pretty good tot movie, but yeah, total hee-hee. See what I did there? Sneaky, sneaky. I guess you could say he's the best part of Pet Sematary too.
Oh, by far.
Yeah, you could say that.
Fangoria nomination.
He was, I think, pretty obviously having a good time hamming it up.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's... That movie just doesn't work, but yet.
If you look at that script, what was he going to do? Try to be serious?
Right. It's just a very unpleasant Tales from the Crypt episode. And so. Now, after around the same time, before Shawshank Redemption, he was in a bunch of other TV guest spot episodes. But I like to point out he was also another prison guard, a lieutenant this time, in the movie Last Light, which starred Forest Whitaker and Kiefer Sutherland, who co-directed. And so when I saw that movie, which is a cliche but very watchable, solid prison drama, it was like, yeah, that totally made sense why he was in this. And then Shawshank Redemption, because he had it down to a tooth, where he's like, all right, wise guy, you want to play rough?
Like I said, he's got that physical presence where he plays those characters well, even though by all accounts he's a sweetheart in real life.
Yeah, and no ego about him. Never heard anything awful about him just taking a role too seriously or holding up filming. I did a few years ago see the miniseries that was based on a true crime thing called Love, Lies, and Murder, where it was just another housewife just finding out that her husband might have done the unthinkable, because he's been out doing Lord knows what after hours. And so it was just interesting how they were able to make this true crime thing actually be very subtle and suspenseful without, in the wrong hands, it would have just been terrible, you know, melodrama that you laugh at. Or just start pacing around because you're bored. I did think it was funny that it was in Cast a Deadly Spell, because that's another movie that's often remarked as, you know, the most H.P. Lovecraft movie of all time.
Well, I don't know. I think until now, I think Lovecraft Country has kicked it off.
Right. It's sacrilege for HBO on not picking that back up. What the hell were they thinking?
Literally.
What the hell? So, Daniel, I know you have some hysterical memories of Earth 2. You hate it. I like it. But he was a good captain. Or co-anchor. You
know, he was a highlight of this of an otherwise really lousy show. This was... Like, the mid-90s was an interesting time when you had, like, Babylon 5. You had, you know...
Sequest.
Sequest, thank you. So many off-the-wall sci-fi shows coming out. And it was not that far off from Syfy really nailing it with Stargate and the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Right. And yet, this movie, I think the biggest issue is the first few free episodes do take a while just setting it all up. They're well filmed, but it's like, okay, well, let's
do something, damn it!
Let's do something. The most exciting thing is the ship crashing, and it was off screen. So I think it really picks up by the end, but that's just it. I had it all night to binge, so I'm kind of cheating here. I didn't have to wait for it to get good. I saw it all in one scoop, and I remember the good parts.
Thinking of Clancy Brown in the 90s, we may as well mention his voice work on Gargoyles.
You know, and see, I kind of forget about Gargoyles because it was so overpowered by all his DC work for me. But yeah.
Yeah, that's his best work. But I'm convinced Disney's bringing Gargoyles back for their streaming service.
Hello.
Okay, maybe not.
I would expect him to definitely be in just something like this, especially since he made a guest spot on The Mandalorian. So
yeah, I'm convinced they probably will. So we're just going to see if they bring him back for it.
Well, I'm not seeing a Gargoyles credit. Was he one of the guest stars?
He was like several different small characters.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Mm. Tomas Barad. Okay, yeah. If I saw him, it was for a minute, because, yeah, he was always three different guest spots, so I definitely... I never saw the cartoon version of the Mighty Ducks. I just didn't care, but I definitely recall seeing the trailer, and he was, yeah, the main character, Siege or something. It was like, so these guys look like mutant Donald and Daffy Ducks, and they're playing a game in space. It's kind of like Space Jam, but it's Disney. Has nothing to do with the Emilio Estevez movies of the same name. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think you could say, other than his voice being catchy, he knew that he had to make it stick. So what do you think he did? Has anyone ever seen anything on how he brushes up and does his voice or gets in the character? Because I couldn't find anything on even that.
He's never really done much about that, which is actually interesting to me because, you know, as with so many of his screen roles, he either plays a psycho, this brutal, monstrous, you know, bloodthirsty thing, or he's this really restrained, gentlemanly kind of almost mob boss type character. Somehow he can do either one.
Right. And being part of the DC and Marvel universe definitely helped, but we could talk about those all day, you know, so... So I'm going to pose the ultimate question to you. Who do you fear more, his version of Lex Luthor or his Ray Schoenover from the new, you know, Netflix, Marvel, Daredevil and Punisher universe?
Luthor.
Okay.
Luthor, definitely.
Yep.
Just wasn't in it. It just, even though he's all animated, we're talking cartoons, the live action, something about the voice. You just know he's going to make do on his promise. I've been meaning to go back through Outer Limits and Tales from the Crypt, but I'm sure I saw parts of his episodes at one point.
I saw his Tales from the Crypt.
He did a lot of small TV roles.
Yeah, 7 episodes of ER. I'm surprised I never saw those. I definitely saw his episodes of The Practice, and it was interesting just watching that 2-part episode. I was like, oh, he's playing an opposing attorney who's by the book. That's so not Clancy Brown. You should be the guy who's breaking the rules and doing unethical shit. Yeah. And he's in a very awkward Star Trek Enterprise episode. In the first 2 seasons, they don't have their shit down yet. but by season 3 and 4, it gets way better. But I do actually kind of like his season 2 or something appearance, because I was like, he was playing an interesting, just kind of, it was kind of like if Khan's people were having a party on a ship. He's like, get us back to our planet. I was like, that's funny. I need to go back for the show of Sleepy Hollow, and he had another sheriff role on there. Chicago PD was fun because he had a ex-con role, and he could have easily just kind of sleptwalked for that role, but it was kind of cool seeing him in that one, because you just wanted to see, was he just gonna, he bought so much to just what is otherwise just a very petty person. He's like, you may control me, I'm going back and do what I want. What is it about his country twang that he's able to do, do you guys think?
In a way, it's like Buford T. Justice. You know, he's got that slight, naturally gruff voice where there's an authority mm-hmm. there. But if he adds a little Southern twang onto it, you've got just enough of a, for lack of a better word, a buffoonish element that it itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyone else would risk coming off as unintentional self-parody, and I guess that's just it. He doesn't try and do just too many accents or anything. He just tries to do kind of a stereotype and elevate it. He was really good as a douchebag boss of Tom Wilkinson's character in the movie Normal, which was based on a true life story about a man just, you know, trying to transition into becoming a woman. And he plays the unethical boss who decides to cheat on his unfaithful wife. And it's just like, but it's so interesting because he's just really good at also just covering up his true intent. And in that one, you know, he's like, oh, we're just chatting, having a meal. It's like, yeah, no, you're totally cheating.
Now, I'm going to go back to Buckaroo Banzai for a moment. If I remember correctly, I think he has a little bit of a twang in his role there, too.
I think so. I was definitely too distracted by Jeff Goldblum, you know, looking around like, who? And it is interesting how I think you could definitely argue that, like most professional actors, they just do a backstory, and that's why they're able to just talk about what their character is, regardless of how much of it we actually see on the paper versus a camera. What's funny is he was in so many other movies I saw as a kid, didn't necessarily like, but I had no idea he was in those, and so it's just so funny. It's like, yeah, well, what did he do in that movie? Animals Wish is like, okay, I saw it on Cartoon Network all the time. I didn't know he was the sheriff in that one. I didn't know he was in Flubber, but
I don't remember him in that either.
Best left not remembering that. So let's talk about Sergeant Zim on Starship Troopers.
I have a guilty confession to make. Well, my dad dragged me to see this movie. I was not particularly interested, but he wanted to because he liked the books. And and then I proceeded to drag my mom to see it just because she effing hates these kind of movies and I want to torment her.
Okay.
And to this day, she has not forgiven me.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow. But,
so she won't let you pick the movie.
You know, Clancy's character, I feel he was a little miscast in this. For his age and his presence, he should have been playing a more senior, like a general or something.
Yeah, I don't know if that was part of the joke, that they were getting an older guy who should have made it to a different class by now, but, you know, got taken advantage by the propaganda system, or he was just showing his age and they just picked him because of his voice and demeanor. But yeah, I think he does good in the role, but it definitely makes better sense seeing that character in animated form in the Roughnecks cartoon spinoff, because A, that's kind of a different tone, and B, you know, they animate his character differently. So yeah, pretty much at least it helped that he had some of the best comedic lines in that movie, just because like many people, I hated the movie when I first saw it. And then I realized, wow, the book is technically written by a guy who's kind of pro-Nazi. And so then, you know, seeing that Verhoeven was just going for just a spoof of the Gulf War in outer space is like, okay, well, in an Iron Sky way that works, but it's still not for the audience. Yeah, if not miscast, they definitely could have at least put some makeup on him or had him dye his hair. Because, like you say, he does look a little gruffy there. And like you say, he's like, what? And they gave him... Yeah, okay, so he was a... I can't speak today. He was... Yeah, sergeant, so he should have definitely been more... probably a commander. Lieutenant or something. What other movies have you guys seen him in that you've forgotten he's in?
It's not a movie, but it's one that I... It's a cartoon I thoroughly enjoyed. It's a movie... It's a TV show called Axe Cop.
Yes, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
Especially I don't know why they took it off the air, but it... But he had a role in there, and I thoroughly enjoyed him in that. But also, I thoroughly enjoyed Nick Offerman, who played the titular role as Axe Cop.
There you go, Ron Swanson, guys. Yeah, I think it helps that his guest spots, you never know what he's going to play. And so, just again, just another guy using surprise to his advantage. But, I mean, I definitely, he's really good at just even doing just a total, just playing ball. It's like, but by the end of the episode or the end of the movie, he has kind of a different say in what he's doing. I know he's on the Goldbergs and those recently. I need to catch up on those, but I thought it was definitely fun just seeing him on other shows like Leverage and Medium. And on Law and Order, he plays a crooked sheriff and like a total. And it was interesting seeing him on that episode because he's like totally just basically given an F you to like the attorney generals and everything. And he's just like, yeah, this is my little town. I'm going to do what I want. did you guys expect to see him on The Mandalorian?
I kind of figured he would show up there eventually. I mean, that's the kind of show you're going to get all kinds of players like him.
Right. And he's done just so many. I think he had done a little known fact. He was in the Star Wars Bounty Hunter video game and as Montross, the main villain in that. It was like a renegade Mandalorian. And I thought that was just, and I didn't know he did voiceovers in Clone Wars because I could never get into it. But I just thought it was like, yeah, it makes sense that he's going to be part of the universe.
He's done so much more voice work than he gets credit for. That's because his few really memorable roles are just that towering.
Very towering. I think many people should definitely check out if they have any episodes of Penguins of Madagascar, G.I. Joe, Renegades, or Transformers Prime. I think you'll definitely dig his voice.
Not enough to be said about his Lex Luthor.
Yeah, and some people I know, they know him just for that, aside from Mr. Krabs, but then there's others just like, they just seem to get distracted by all the live action forms.
You know, on the other end of the spectrum, I actually rate him above the Mr. Sinister of the Fox X-Men cartoon in my boyhood. I think he did a better job of that character.
Mm-hmm. You know,
Pardon?
I'll just check Wolverine in the X-Men.
Yeah, Wolverine the X-Men, just, like I said, he gives the character this sort of gentlemanly restraint that I just picture Sinister having. And I may as well confess also, about 2013, I think it was, I went to the New York City Comic Con dressed as Sinister, or what I think he would look like in a movie, and I walked around trying to imitate Clancy Brown's voice.
How did that go?
Well, no one complained.
But it wasn't like me as the Wishmaster, where everyone's like, who the hell are you supposed to be?
the one little pat in the back I'll give myself, the outfit, I was wearing like a black suit and tie, a black suit with a red white shirt, a red tie. I had my face very heavily painted. I wore a black trench coat, and just when people saw me, they knew who it was supposed to be, even if I didn't look like the comic book version.
Jeez.
And then I actually got some compliments who said, you know what, this is Sinister in a movie.
Well, that's better than just being totally ignored, so that's not my good. Did you guys ever watch the Mortal Kombat cartoon from the 90s?
I did not.
I remember some episodes as a kid. I didn't watch it dedicated, though.
I hear it's not all that great, but But what's funny is I always got it mixed up with a similar thing, which I always felt the live-action movies were trying to imitate with the even more confusing animated cartoon version of Highlander. So this is so funny how I got those both mixed up, because, you know, it didn't help that not only was the whole thing just kind of like a rewrite on the whole, like, what was coming out at the time, but just very, it could only be accepted in a mindless way. And it was just one of those, is like, what is going on and who is this for?
Something that deserves a topic in of itself. The USA Network was a machine for churning out really half-ass animation in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to make that animation money. They didn't want to have to put the money into the animation.
Yeah, and much like the Highlander thing, it didn't help that they would release some of this shit on VHS, but it's like, well, it doesn't make sense if I don't watch it in some kind of order. Again, that's just showing how much you guys even cared, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, they apparently did it back-to-back with a Street Fighter cartoon, which...
Oh, yeah. That's even worse!
Okay, so there you go. Unlike TBS's Captain Planet, they didn't give a fuck, so there you go.
A topic that is reserved for the Nightmare Nerd is going to be the USA Darkstalkers cartoon.
Oh, I've heard about that. Deep hurting, I tell you.
Oh, it hurts, man. It hurts so bad.
Although I do got to give them credit, though, for doing different kinds of cartoons. Like, he did Calamity Jane and the New Adventures of Zorro. So it's like, he's doing an animated Western. That's pretty awesome.
Actually, in a few interviews I've seen with him, he said that in the late 90s and early 2000s, that point in his career, his daughter had just been born. So he was looking to spend more time at home and less time having to travel over the world.
There you go.
And voice acting was just convenient for him that way.
Right. You just go in and shout and say, is that how you want it? I do like, though, too, that he kind of gets a lot of these other third-party cartoons that you just wouldn't even expect anyone to really, especially his caliber, like, he could have easily stuck with just live action. And, I mean, he gets to be on a bunch of the Disney and Nickelodeon cartoons, and I'm sure I saw plenty of reruns of Timon and Pumbaa and Angry Beavers and Godzilla the series, but not enough. But I think it's just funny how he started those one-off episodes.
Once you got your own store, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it could have easily backfired. Like, we've seen plenty of other famous A-listers who've done voice work and were like, well, I just see them in the recording booth just, you know, exploding, not actually becoming the character. And I think someone saw something in both the voice and how he presented himself. It's like, okay, he's actually really dedicating it. He's not being hammy.
I've seen him be hammy more with live action than I've seen him be with animation.
Right. Just because that's just the kind of movie he is. Like, did anyone bother seeing Hellbenders?
Nope.
It's one of those movies. It's another movie where it's just like just people fighting demons. And once his character dies, you're like, I fucking hate this movie. You took out the best part of this movie. There's an independent, like, superhero movie called Sparks. And I thought that was kind of funny because he's kind of catering to that whole mindset of superhero. And much like in Cowboys and Aliens, I do hate how he kind of became, like, trying to outdo Sean Bean and Danny Trejo there for a while, where he just dies.
Yeah.
So, John, tell us how many nuts Pathfinder sucked.
that's more one I call forgettable at best. Because I actually forgot he was in that until.
Well, yeah, he's heavily in makeup and he's imitating his Highlander role, and he's just like, why was he in this? There's nothing on the script. This is like, you got the soulless guy who gave us the Texas Chainsaw remake.
It was a paycheck, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, the animation jobs were kind of lull, so he just jumped into that one.
Right. Was anyone surprised to see him in Steven Soderbergh's The Informant?
Not particularly, actually.
No, I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, he's done. You can see him showing up in those kind of features.
playing a businessman like Luthor. But I guess what was interesting about this one is how he pretty much is just subtly calling the main character on bluff. Is like, yeah, and by the way, you're making all this fucking shit up. And we're not going to give you this lawsuit. And I just like how he just kind of just slowly is just ripping up the papers. Like, yeah, bye. I'll let the door hit you on the way out. I don't remember him at all in the Nightmare remake.
I remember him. He was one of the better parts of that movie.
Well, who did he play?
He was one of the parents.
The father slash principal.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say, you know what, I think that movie, it's not good, don't get me wrong, but it's better than it gets credit for. And the franchise needed a new coat of paint at that point. They tried. They failed miserably, but they tried. And he definitely is a highlight.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to complain about the acting. It's just kind of the visual style. And whoever's phone is going off, can you guys please shut it off? that's fine. Whoever's phone's going off, please. When I saw him in Cowboys Aliens that following year, I was like, why didn't he have a bigger part?
He should have, honestly.
It's another movie where it just only reminds you about Tom's favorite movie, Oblivion. It's like, yeah, it's kind of a better movie. It's Full Moon, it was the same kind of deal. Cowboys and aliens in a future. And I guess that movie's issue is it just wants to be so deep, but you can tell they just cut it out so backstory. You don't know why. From the studio heads that it was risking too long.
And to be fair, it's not easy to be deep and philosophical when one of the main characters is George Takei.
Right. George Takei.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess with that one, the main issue was they kept refilming and reshooting it. Just having all these other people get on board, and it would have been probably better. I did not see Justin, but see John dies at the end, but I know that, you know, was based on material, and it was by Phantasm.
His more recent work.
Yeah.
A little fan fiction scenario of mine. If there was ever to be a remake, reboot, or continuation of Phantasm, he should be the new Tall Man.
Oh, yeah.
He's about the only guy I could see being a worthwhile successor to
Ace. I could definitely see that.
I would hope so. I mean, more or less, did anyone even see this one?
Oh, no.
Which one?
John dies at the end.
Oh, no, I did not see that one.
No, I haven't. I heard all about it. I did not bother to see it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either because I hate spoilers.
I know a lot of people were saying that are really violent. I'm just like, okay then. He's had a few other bit parts in movies like Homefront and 99 Homes and Warcraft, and I don't remember him in any of those. But
I remember his small part in Homefront.
Yeah, I just don't remember it at all, and I've seen it a few different times. So I know a lot of people are talking about Promising Young Woman, and that's another one I've been meaning to see. But you apparently just has a very key part in that. Award. Planned, he has a few other movies coming up. But it seems like he's going to be on the upcoming rehash of Dexter. So I guess that'll be interesting. Who wants to bet money he'll be the police chief versus the serial killer of the week?
I also see he has a movie with Charlie Hunnam and Mel Gibson.
That's some combo.
It's,
boy, howdy.
It's supposed to be an action film, apparently. I know nothing about it.
Please bring him back to DC Animation. Their recent stuff is so terrible.
I haven't seen all those. I saw a few as far back as like 09 and 012 that were all right, but I know, what did anyone think of his General Wade on the live action version of The Flash?
I loved it. Like you said, he's almost like he built for that kind of character.
Sure. I mean, those shows all vary based on episode, let alone on premise or the acting. So, I mean, but one thing they definitely get right, I think, is just the guest stars, because then everyone will always react to him and be like, oh, they need their own version. They need their own spinoff. He did do a spinoff of the Goldbergs, and apparently it only lasted one season, despite him people saying they really dug him as like one of the teachers, or neighbors, one of the two. I saw part of his episode of The Crown where he played LBJ. That's right, Lyndon B. Johnson. So I thought that was both weird casting and it kind of made sense. But
it's kind of like Barry Boss. It's kind of like Barry Boss with his FDR, an FDR American badass. It's weird, but
it's inspired, yeah.
Damn it, Hitler!
Hitler! So he played the Taskmaster in a recent Marvel cartoon called Iron Man and Captain America Heroes United. I did not see that. I did not see that cartoon movie, but it got poor reviews, so...
Yeah, I tried watching it and got the first few minutes in, saw the animation, and said, yep, done. Yeah, I didn't love bad movies, but even I have standards.
Daniel, what did you think on when he returned as Luthor in Superman, Batman, Public Enemies? Because that was a star stud.
I'm afraid I didn't see it, actually.
Oh, that was, I think, is one of his best performances as Lex Luthor.
I mean,
that, you got LeVar.
That was one of the highlights of the old school DC animated universe, was the phenomenal voice casting. And I can't tell you how shocked I was to learn Tim Daly brought, you know, Joe Haggett from Wings. That was Superman.
Yeah. It took me a while to realize that, too. I'm like, why does that voice sound familiar? They did good here. They brought Daly back here, and then they had Kevin Conroy as Batman. But it was interesting, too, just all the other guest cast they had. They had CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller, LeVar Burton as Black Lightning, and Sondra Berkeley as Captain Atom. So I was like, okay.
I'm sorry, but in this case, all I can think of was that Harvey Birdman episode, you know, just the, that's right, the power lightning
in my pants.
Oh, my God.
I'll take the case, but first
I'll take the case. Oh man, I'm actually surprised he's not on Harvey Birdman.
Well, they're talking about a revival, so he probably will be.
Yeah,
eager. And they also have they're also starting to show a Bird Girl miniseries. That's pretty much.
Yeah. Gary Cole's a busy man. He'll make time for it.
Just waiting for that third Brady Bunch movie.
Masha, Masha, Masha.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
Oh, he'll probably do it. They might even just do it in animated form. He'll just reprise the role.
They even feel like that one Geico car commercial where Danny Trejo was, you know, you know, she even knows football. Shut up!
Right. Oh, man. it definitely... I, you know, that's the what everyone likes about those commercials. They really do just they get your attention in the best way, though. Is like you do actually kind of remember what the ad was about versus just how they went about it. Now,
that's so true.
Yeah, I guess I'll move on to his video games. Who remembers him as Neo Cortex in Crash Bandicoot? Took me a while to realize that was him, because they did a real good job of just making him sound like Schwarzenegger. Out of my way.
I actually didn't know he...
Actually, no, that was Tiny. But yeah, Neo Cortex is the main mad scientist, and I don't know, that sounded to me more like Michael Ironside, another Highlander connection there. So I don't know why, it just sounded like him. He was in this other video game called Run Like Hell, which was a third-person shooter and had a big all-star cast, including Kevin Michael Richardson, another voice actor, Kate Mulgrew, Janeway herself, and Michael Ironside, and Brad Dourif, and Lance Henderson.
Oh, wow.
Okay. But I would always hear people talk about Run Like Hell, and they're like, this should have been its own B-movie, because it's kind of a knockoff of Resident Evil, and yet it kind of could have easily made a fun Aliens, Star Trek kind of game or movie or show.
Yeah.
But this is a cult game. A friend of the show, Shane.
I'm the thing about it, I'm amazed he didn't show up as a Trek captain in the 90s.
I would have been down for that at B5, yeah.
Or maybe a Klingon.
Yeah, and so yeah. Pretty much all we got was that stupid Enterprise episode. Oh, what could have been? So what do you think of him as Baron Praxis in the Jack and Daxter games?
I have not played those games, so I can't say.
Really? Okay. Played the crossover games. I don't game anymore either, but yeah, I did three of those, so then he even starred in one of the Sly Cooper games. It's like, that's cool. I definitely played a demo of one of those, but I'm not sure he was in the level that was a free playable level and part of another Sony PlayStation game. I do like that he does play Mr. Krabs and all the other SpongeBob video games. That's easy paychecks. Perfection. He plays Hades in God of War Free, so that just makes sense.
Typecasting.
Born for it. Now, I played Call of Duty Black Ops 2. I don't recall his voice in there, so it must have been one of those very last levels, just a brief, just blurb and you miss it. Surprisingly enough, he also was part of the Mass Effect game series. I was like, damn, he's just going and going, just up to the next level. So, as recent as he has done is playing Lex Luthor in a Lego DC supervillain game and doing the motion capture and voice.
Those Lego games, don't get me started.
Well, the Star Wars ones were awesome.
Wouldn't you rather play with real Legos?
Why can't I have both?
Exactly.
Sometimes I want to play with bricks, but not actually leave a mess. So, yes, guys, we played with toys growing up. Get over it. So I haven't played those. I've seen some of those Lego animations that were amusing and campy, but some of them were painful. He hasn't done any of those. Now, I have seen the promos for Detroit Become Human.
I have too.
Much like that other one that had Elliot Page and William Dafoe, it was just jaw-dropping. Like, man, finally, they figured out how to make it be cinematic, these video games. And actually look very interesting. Like, you're getting an emotional response just watching the trailer with the beautiful piano.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave it to what other roles do you guys want to see him in? Like, well, or better yet, rephrase. What signature roles from books that they might adapt into a movie or show would you actually did you see him in when you were reading the pages?
Ooh.
Well, something coming question. Up here. If we could build a time machine and get the 90s Clancy Brown back, I would say he'd be Beast Raban from Dune.
Well, let's hope they do a cartoon if this movie's a hit.
Oh, this movie looks like it's going to be a shitstorm.
Oh, why you say that?
Because I love the books, and I don't think they're adaptable to film, and just some of the casting choices they made are a little off the wall to me.
Well, I mean, this is the same guy who gave us the second Blade Runner and Prisoners. I think he knows all the stuff that and compromises he's having to do. If anything, one thing I do know he can do is he never has actors play typical roles they're known for. So.
And oh, how can you not mention, obviously, Clancy's crowning pinnacle of his work as an actor, his true renaissance, his greatest achievement, Pathfinder.
Because we just already spent half the
episode. We're hoping to forget.
I know. I'm trying to forget it.
We're trying to forget it.
We're actually going through therapy to forget it.
I felt like I, as close as I got to any emotional or thrilling interaction with that movie, is just the Foley on that sounded very convincing, and it just reminded me how my brain was felt like it was being crushed from inside, like the helmets and those Vikings. It's like, yeah.
I like to think Clancy was probably downing some real mead between shots just to get himself through this.
I'm sure he has plenty of hysterical stories to talk about at conventions.
If he even likes to talk about it.
If he wants to. I wonder if someone has dared to ask him and he's just been like, or better yet, if he ever came to a sci-fi fantasy horror convention and they had that as like movies he was listed on, and if he marked it out with a marker. I never played any of the Saints Row video games, but I know you had a key voiceover role there. I want to talk about a game I used to play and I thought was cool as fuck and should be interesting because he's playing Tom Cruise's character. That's right. He's in the video game version of Minority Report. Everybody runs. I feel
interesting
like
choice.
Yeah, it came out for all platforms, Xbox, GameCube, and PlayStation 2. I played it on the latter, and I was just having fun because you could actually... It was closer to Total Recall. So imagine blonde Tom Cruise with Schwarzenegger-type muscles and just going around beating up all these agents that have been sent to defeat you or capture you or kill you, depending on the level, and how you can actually get away with murder multiple times in that game. So I can safely say that he is one of many people who can definitely has at least 1,000 plus kills to his name. Actors with a high body count. Because of this game and because of playing Lex Luthor, obviously. Who knows? Maybe Mr. Krab blew up the Krabby Patty at one point or another. So, I don't know.
And by the way, one of my favorite YouTube videos of all time as of late. It's clips from the movie The Lighthouse, but with SpongeBob sound added.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And there's another movie I want
to watch. Can't you say it?
Just say it. He might. There's a newsflash. Maybe he could steal a role that William Dafoe had played. Maybe he could play the Aquaman character or Green Goblin.
I can still see him as the voice of the Goblin.
But no, what I want him to do is I want him to play, if they remake Wishmaster, he should play the Djinn.
Djinn, I can see that.
I can see that too.
He should be the Djinn. He did play, as close as he got, was playing Frankenstein on an episode of DuckTales recently, so there you go.
Wow.
I have not seen that show. I hear it's awful.
Actually, I've heard high praise for it.
Well. Whoever these podcasters were, they were not liking it, and I just. But
something I could see him getting into actually would be voiceovers for historical documentaries.
Oh, Ken Burns.
There are any number of historical figures like Rasputin, you know, Genghis Khan that I could see him being useful for the voiceover for.
There you go. I feel like he should play a Civil War general. Like, play both Robert E. Lee and, like, some other high-ranking guy. He can play Abraham Lincoln. because he would be just more, I'm a subtle gentleman and I do not approve in this time of war.
Sorry to quibble, as a history buff, Lincoln by every account had a very kind of high pitched voice.
Oh, so he should be more arrogant and almighty.
Daniel Day-Lewis honestly came about as close as I picture, you know, just the descriptions I've read of Lincoln's voice, it was high pitched, it was kind of raspy, and probably from, he may have suffered from macromegaly.
Nice.
Just get Clancy Brown some helium, he'll be fine.
Damn.
Now, for me, I see him in, I could see him in a more recent game that I've absolutely loved. It's called Outriders. I could see him playing either the Pyromancer, who's a guy who can shoot fire, obviously, or one of the main bosses. Yeah, he just has that presence that he could pull off either one.
Well, there you go. I'd watch it. What do you guys think about his multiple voiceovers on Ninja Turtles and Green Lantern? Both the shit film and a shit cartoon.
Hey, I happen to like that shit film.
To me, TMNT, that will always be the one I knew in the 80s with, you know...
This was a more recent one they did.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But there's no replacing the original.
Alright. I thought the voiceovers were at least inspired as opposed to just trying to get out-of-work D-list celebs. I didn't realize he was in a reboot of Biker Mice from Mars. I was like, what the fuck? Okay. He was in a recent Thundercats. I do like, though, how he was on The Batman, which I always kind of found underrated once it got going. Yes. And, this was in the early 2000s, and he got to play Mr. Freeze and Bane in addition to reprising Lex Luthor in a Batman cartoon. So it's like, okay, cool. But I think it's interesting that he would play just all these other key cartoons, and I not enough people are talking about it. I would have thought people would be talking about all this other stuff. I don't know what channels these are even on anymore. Like, were these originally on regular cartoons, or are they now just Netflix only? But
well, everything's moving into streaming services only, man.
Yeah, I guess so. But I just saw it. So as close as he got to Spider-Man was with Spectacular Spider-Man, and he played Rhino and Ox.
That's fun, I can see him, man.
But no Green Goblin. What the fuck?
I could even see him as the voice of Venom when he's got the costume on.
Oh, yeah.
He might have to. Ring-a-ding. Did anyone ever pick him out when they watched Jackie Chan Adventures?
No,
I did not. I forgot who
was on. That was past my cartoon phase.
Or Buzz Lightyear? No? Okay. Oh, that's fine.
No.
I would always just see parts of this, and, you know. The problem with regular TV shows, in my opinion, was just by the time they would re-air it, it was either, you know, by the time you were just sleeping in as opposed to getting up early at 6 in the morning. It's like, and then there was other times it's like, yeah, there's a reason I didn't see it. They only played it once and then they canceled the show. So right now he's on an Apple TV Plus and co-produced French show called Calls. There's a connection to The Mandalorian. It co-stars Rosario Dawson and Pedro Pascal. So, there's also a Nick Offerman connection, and that his Parks and Rec co-star Audrey Plaza is also in this. So
nice.
Interesting.
It has a very interesting voice cast, but I'm just like, okay, has this already aired? Apparently so. Have I not seen this? Good job advertising it, fucking Apple.
I'll go a step further. I want to see him in the Kevin Smith movie.
Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith movie. In his heyday or current mediocre?
I was going to say.
I think it would have been. Okay, perfect.
Don't know where to put him, but he would have been perfect.
Perfect.
I would have been curious.
Oh, man. So I'm going to have John talk about his favorite movie, and I say that sarcastically, Thor Ragnarok. What did you think of his voiceover as Surtur?
Well, he's probably one of the best parts of that movie, if you ask me. Just could never get into that one at all. And I forgot that was him until later on.
All good. Oh, so I'm fucking done. So if anyone wants to just say a few other things, it's like, how do you just pit his other characters all together? There's got to be some other character he's played besides Lex Luthor. Who else could shine a light and easily rival so-called Luthor if you had to put all his characters to death? Could Neocortex throw some bombs or run him over? Or
does it have to be said? Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, so you think a shitty prison guard who shoots people to death could have an effect on Lex Luthor?
I mean, it's such a scuzzy character, but he owned it.
You're not sure that this other character would be bought off by Luthor in prison?
Oh, no.
Well, we're talking about him with Luthor in prison. For one thing, he wouldn't be in the kind of prison Luthor's in. Luthor ain't going to Shawshank.
Well, maybe if he wants to play it on the low and he just gets a special treatment, appears out of prison that no one expects him to be at.
But nonetheless, just he was one of the highlights of that movie. He really owned his character, and for what a nice guy he is in real life, he just played this bully so good.
I'll go ahead and say maybe the Kurgan.
I was going to say.
The Kurgan and Shawshank. There you go.
And, correct me if I'm wrong. Was there not supposed to be a scene of the Kurgan having sex with the hooker Candy where he snaps her neck, but they cut that for some reason?
I think you're right.
I think you're right. Yeah.
It would have just slowed down the plot. All you see is her walk and say, "I'm Candy," and he looks at the camera and says, "Oh, of course you are.
Of course you are, my pretty."
Maybe.
I can't show you what became of her, but that was supposed to be it.
It would have just been gratuitous violence, so yeah.
Yeah.
Gratuitous violence in a movie like that? Oh, yeah.
Well, people are going to be headed. You don't want to go too far.
I'll say this. If anything, it might be a tie, because then the Kurgan is going to electrify Lex Luthor, and Luthor's going to have some plan worked out to where he's like...
In that matchup, I'd almost go with Luthor. Kurgan has raw power, but Lex Luthor has knowledge of power and how to use it. So if it was Luthor versus Kurgan, I hand it Luthor.
Tallow and all the rest. So.
He's Professor Xavier minus the mental powers and a wheelchair. So.
And he's evil. He's an evil Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he is evil Bruce Wayne. He's kind of.
There were episodes of Lex and Bruce Wayne interacting, so.
If anything, he definitely would have just already taken over Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos' companies by now.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Hashtag penis rocket.
I'm not going to go there.
Actually, I think Ograsmo had a better name for it. The cock rocket.
And I'm sorry, but just Lex Luthor would not lower Clancy's Lex Luthor would not lower himself to that kind of a who's bigger contest.
Right, because as far as we know, he already has the goods.
He's Clancy Brown, how could he not?
Well, I was just talking to Luthor, but not. Jeez. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, I'm done talking about other guys' penises for tonight.
You were there. Thoughts, you all.
Clancy Brown is going to be one of those character actors that we know. It's going to,
he has a like a William H. Macy or Viggo Mortensen kind of vibe to him that you know that he's there, but you don't always remember where he was, but you know he's there. And he, I think he's his versatility, even though he is typecast for the most part, he does have a versatility to him that makes him ideal, whether you need a ship captain or you need a heavy. He's one guy you can easily call.
He's perfect. Recognizable.
Recognizable and not in a bad way. So of all these times he's co-starred with Michael Ironside, would his Kurgan be able to defeat Michael Ironside, or would Michael Ironside's crazy hair and soul be able to defeat him?
Lex Luthor versus Darkseid. I gotta go with Darkseid on that one.
That's a good point. Is that how DC casting works? Hire anyone from Mortal Kombat and Highlander.
Exactly.
Or every other 80s hit movie. I'm really actually surprised he didn't star in a Walter Hill Western movie other than Extreme Prejudice. Why was he not in 48 Hours or one of the diehards?
I guess I didn't bother asking him.
Too much.
That's true.
Hey, mention Viggo Mortensen. If they ever do an animated Lord of the Rings, I could totally see him as Aragorn or and as Saruman. So there you go.
Yeah.
As long as you got Hugo weaving in there, I'm in.
Oh, but he's going to be too busy in John Wick 5. I'm just kidding. I don't know. It is funny you said weaving, because had they not already done a cool job, in my opinion, with V for Vendetta, I would have totally seen him as a V.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
They did an anime version of that. They could have totally... Because he just has that tactic. He's like, yeah, I'm a freedom fighter / terrorist. I could totally do that. Oh.
Michael Ironside, I think...
Michael Ironside.
I think he could do justice to the John Saxon characters from the two failed... Gene Roddenberry shows from the 70s.
Oh, Earth 2, and what was the other one? Actually, no, not that one. There was some other thing. I think that was actually called Earth 2, coincidentally.
Yeah, it was Earth 2, and there was another one. I can't remember the name of it, but in both those shows, he played Ethan Hunt.
Oh, maybe he should do his own version of Mission Impossible. Coincidentally.
Not Ethan Hunt, no, it was somebody else. Now you got me. Let's see, it was the
Shane Boulders.
It's the same character that was used, same name that was used in the Gene Roddenberry Andromeda series. Dylan Hunt.
Dylan Hunt is ready for action. Yeah, that takes the cake. What Daniel's been hitting all along, just being some Roddenberry inspired space epic. Have him be like the head of like the space base. You will not commander this ship. You are relieved of your command.
Yeah, you're going a little Buffalo Bill on that. So.
Oh, I was doing my shitty version of an admiral.
You will not commander this base. You have been relieved of command.
Oh, now it sounds like you're doing your best Dolph Lundgren.
No, if I was doing more Dolph Lundgren, it'd be more...
Dolph Lundgren. Yeah, it'd be
much more mealy mouthed.
Now I want to see him be a bad guy in a Dolph Lundgren movie.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy. African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. And then we just watch it, and we talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm. Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, oh, we know what we like to do. We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller
yes.
of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you can think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, motherfucker. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say
ah.
All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At GOHpod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get
it's
out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping
absolutely.
Up at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be
did
a rough
you watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's late, it's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 out. Bana 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 out.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes, a gratuitous movie. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Zemanoff, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, the life of Lydia Zemanoff, daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Red. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Hi, everybody. It's Mac Jackson. I wanted to invite you to a new site called the Forever Adventure Network. This website has everything. Pictures, videos, blogs. There's original music by Harmony Constant. Two podcasts. One is the MacGyver Podcast, where we celebrate Richard Dean Anderson, his iconic roles, and how it's influenced our lives. There's episode discussions, interviews, and life conversations. The second podcast is the Never Gets Old Podcast, where we celebrate all the best things that we love in life, from TV, movies, music, and comics. The site is also the home for the MacGyver SG-1 audio series, an ongoing adventure series that continues the adventures of MacGyver and SG-1. There are also multiple stores to choose from for all of your pop culture and adventure needs. Come on by and check us out today. And thanks for joining the adventure.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet. And in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up